So Thunder win.
Yep.
Win the NBA Finals. I honestly, I know nationally it's like, ah, they're the next dynasty. I'll hold off on that. 624. All right. We'll talk about dynasty stuff 624. I want to know if Tyrese Halliburton is a cautionary tale. Because he goes down in game seven. He was hot as hell in game seven. He goes down in the first quarter. And Lyman and I talked because it was Donovan last year. Donovan had the calf injury last year. You wrote
Boston.
About it.
Boston.
Against Boston in the Athletic. You wrote about it in the Athletic. And then who got the calf injury during this playoffs this year? Was it Evan? Was it Donovan again? Was it Donovan again?
Yeah.
All right, because Jeff had said, I remember Phelps had said, he's like, oh, I wouldn't play him.
Absolutely.
And we are freaking, that's the whole thing of it. We were freaking out. I was freaking out. I don't know if Lyman was, but I was like, it's the playoffs. You got to play him. And I remember with the Halliburton thing, I kind of backed off that a little bit with the Halliburton thing because now I see it with a clue. Because I will admit wholeheartedly, if it gets thrown into my face like, well, I'm not going to play him. Like, man, we're already down like this. We've had a great. I'm more emotionally involved about the Cleveland Cavaliers than I would ever be with the Indiana Pacers. So I look at it more with a clear head if I'm looking at Indiana. And I remember we had talked about that, and I gave Jeff credit. I said, gosh, like these things, they seem to always lead to calf injuries, seem to always lead to Achilles injuries, going back to Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, now Tyrese Halliburton. I'm sure there's another one in there that I can't remember. I'm sorry?
Dame Lillard,
yes, that's right. You have these guys that have these calf injuries that lead to Achilles injuries, and you know, I felt that Tyrese Halliburton, Jason, was in an impossible place. Because you never know if you're going to get back. It seems like it's an improbable finals run. So you never know if you're going to get back. And it's like, this may be your only chance. Like you have to go for it. And now he gets hurt in game seven. It's like, we aren't going to see him until...
He'll miss all of next year.
Yeah. We won't see him until October 2027? 26. I'm sorry, 26? Yeah. Boy, that made it sound way longer than what it was. We won't see him until October 2026, probably. I mean, that's an incredibly long amount of time. But it is a game seven. So how do I – like, you didn't go down in December. You went down in game seven of the NBA Finals. And I don't think that there's any way that – it's tough. I understand he got hurt. I understand the chances of getting hurt go up significantly. I've read about that since yesterday and all throughout this weekend. But, man, like, how do you look people in the eye and say you're not going to go? Or how is anybody going to stop you from going when you're the number one guy and it's a game seven?
Yeah, it's Cavs are so tricky. And no injuries are the same, right? Can we agree? Like, injuries are not created equally, and some are far more severe than others. And some can lead to more catastrophic things than others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Cavs for a while, I wrote it last year with Donovan in the Boston series that these are types of injuries that are measured in weeks, not days. And because of what they can lead to, you really can't go on them. And I think Tyrese will be a cautionary tale for a lot of guys moving forward. Victor Oladipo, I saw, was on social media hot about this. And I mean, listen, the timing.
What did Victor Oladipo say?
Just basically, you're just going to move on with the game and act like nothing happened. Like, can we start looking at this injury? Injuries differently? Can we stop with how injuries
did he
are
want
treated?
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be difficult here. Did he want him to stop the game and not play the rest of the game?
I think it was passion and emotion talking, but I think the larger point was what we're talking about, that calf injuries are often just dismissed as anything else. And obviously right now in Cleveland with the talk of injuries and how the Cavs went out, and there was a lot of talk around that. And again, that's where I think injuries are created differently. And if it's an injury that is not going to lead to further damage, I think that has to be viewed differently than an injury like a calf that can lead to missing an entire season if you continue to play on it. I totally get why Halliburton wanted to go. I bet you he still would tell you today he'd do it again, because that's just how the dude's built and wired. And he had a chance to win a championship, and he's going to go for it. But at some point, you know, I don't know, you know, like in the NFL now with concussions, you have doctors that step in and say, no, you cannot play. Calf injuries, I think, need to start being treated a lot more seriously than they have been to this point.
Should they have stopped them?
Should they have stopped them? It's hard to say, probably. But it's hard. Because, so like, And the whole thing with concussions, right? Like, that's a whole different lane because of CTE.
It really is. Like, we're not talking about long-term cognitive effects.
We're not talking about life and death.
On an Achilles.
We're talking about an Achilles. You're going to miss a year, and your head's going to be fine.
Yeah.
So, it's man, this is the gray area. There is no right or wrong. And I think they did a pretty good job of warning him of how this could go. I think if you saw him on the floor, he said, I did it. Like, he knew the risks. And he did it anyway. And I think it comes down to a personal choice with guys.
I don't know if they could have stopped him. I don't think they should have. I think it has to come down to his personal choice and the pressure that's on it. And I know that everything that comes with it. I mean, I think that we like to call each other out in basketball more than we do like any other sport, really. Because you could see guys in street clothes. You can see them sitting there. It's a game where the cameras are on these guys at all times. Like, I think if a guy's standing on the sidelines and he's in street clothes and stuff like that, very rarely do you get to see a chance where he's assing off. They're always on there on the bench. Somebody's going to say something funny during a two-hour basketball game.
Of course.
And it's going to catch him at the wrong time, and you're laughing at something. Somebody's going to say something. Even if you're frustrated, somebody says something funny that is going to make somebody chuckle. It happens, even if you're laughing in frustration. So you're an impossible moment if you're Tyrese Haliburton. You sit there. You are on the road. At least you're not at home. You're on the road. If you were to sit there and be out in this basketball game, I don't know how guys coming off the floor, going on the floor, I don't know how that can even compute. So for Tyrese Haliburton, it's easy for me to say, oh, yeah, go out there. Well, I'm not the one who's got to go through a year of rehab. And then, what, you're not going to go on the road games. You'll probably go to some of the home games. You'll basically be like this missing link for this basketball team that now people have already just taken out of any chance for the 2025-26 season. So Indiana's like out of it now with Tyrese Haliburton out. And that leaves, and yes, I know we start to smell blood in the water where we look at Boston with their situation with Jason Tatum. We look at Indiana with their situation with Tyrese Haliburton. There will be more on that in just a moment. But I think that this has got to be one of the things that we look at because it's not going to be the last time that it's happened. And it's happened twice now with our major superstar in Donovan Mitchell. Where it's like, well, he's got a calf. Well, if he's got a calf, he doesn't play. Yeah, well, we're in the postseason. Well, if we're in the Eastern Conference Finals, we've never been further than the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I find it hard to believe, Jason, like a guy like Donovan, if we're in the Eastern Conference Finals next year against Orlando, I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
And it's a 3-2 Cavs series, chance to go to the finals. You got a bad calf. Like, I don't think anybody's stopping him. I don't think anybody's stopping Donovan Mitchell from playing. I think that this is just what you deal with. We want these guys to go for the moment. They're going for the moment. And I understand that an injury like next year, an injury like that with Tyrese Haliburton next year to like a Donovan Mitchell, God forbid, it changed everything. It would change the entire future of the franchise moving forward. Like Tyrese Haliburton, I assume, is going to be back with Indiana in the next year, and then eventually they'll rebuild it. With the Cavs and with Donovan, like you might be able to speak better to this. I think you're in a 2-year window right now.
100%.
No matter what they do, if they make a move, they don't make a move. If they would have got Kevin Durant, which I think was highly unlikely, if they wouldn't have got him, which they didn't, like it's a 2-year window. And if he got hurt at the end of next year, like
it's over.
That's it.
But on top of that, contracts come into this as well.
Yes.
And Donovan's coming up on another ability to opt out and extend. I don't remember now off the top of my head if it's next year or the year after. I think it's the year after. And Tyrese just signed a 5-year deal a couple years ago. So he's still under contract for a couple more years. Because that plays a role in this too. But the Donovan one's fascinating when you talk about him because he does have a history of calf injuries. And I think he has played it wisely in the past and played it smart in the past with sitting. But also last year, I wrote about this too. There was something different about him this season. Just sort of his obsession with winning is at an all-time high. And I didn't notice it his first couple of years here. And I think he has reached that point in his career where it's the only thing that matters to him.
I think he's one of the few people that you can tell. I'm sure there's plenty of guys in the NFL or the NBA who definitely want to win a championship. But I think he's one of the few guys that a general fan knows that they are obsessed with winning one.
Yeah.
And I think you can count them on one hand where everybody in the world knows that they're obsessed with winning one. So if you were in Donovan's shoes, if God forbid if this were to happen, this is what you pay the guys for. And as unfortunate as it is for a guy like Tyrese Haliburton, as fortunate as it is for Dame Lillard, as Owen brought up, as the same thing with Jason Tatum, like this is part of what it's for. They're not there just to look at and admire. In January, they're there to look at in a Meyer. If they go out and they score 35 and they have a great game, like, that's fantastic. In this moment, you know, you have your own hopes and dreams and the dreams and hopes of those around you. And then there's the fans that get involved with it as well. And I think Tyrese Halliburton was put in an impossible position.
Yeah.
An absolutely impossible position. If he sits, he not only has to wonder what if, as he eventually gets better, and because once you get better, like once it were to be September, August, somewhere in there, and you're feeling better, you're like, could I have went? Could I have gone? And you have to sit there and deal with, you're not going to sit there and pay attention to Stephen A. Smith and everybody else talking about you, but people around you will let you know what they are saying. And you could sit there and be as upset as possible knowing that you couldn't change the history. Or you could really gamble on the future. And you can put yourself, not that he should play because of Stephen A. Smith and all of us arguing, whatever. But you have to wonder always what if. And I don't think he has to wonder what if now. He left it all out there. They didn't win it. But I, as weird as it sounds, and it's easy for me to say not as a professional basketball player, as weird as it sounds, it's like, all right, you went down and you can have as much pride as anybody without winning a championship. As sad as that is, yes.
Well, he was voted most overrated, right, before the playoffs?
There's no way now.
And there was no way that he was going to be, but had he set out Game 7, would the overrated stuff come back?
He's not very well liked across the league. I think that's...
Why is that?
He talks a lot. And I mean, that was our poll, where it was the Athletic Anonymous player. So we can
throw it out.
That he was...
That you got everybody to agree that he was overrated?
No,
the
players are the ones.
You sent out a separate email that said, "Hey guys, we're all going to vote this guy overrated."
I heard you what you said to Pascal Siakam. I know that
the players are the ones that that's not the media. That's the players that voted him the most overrated.
Well, yeah, I know that, but it was still your. We're making a joke, Jason.
Yeah, using your influence.
Well, I don't
Jason
know if he's doing it.
Serious journalist.
He's all. It's 6 a.m. It's Monday.
You should know this.
He hasn't got the coffee.
You've got
in
all
yet.
These
he's
awards
all,
now.
Yeah, he's all. Yeah. We're serious journalists around here now, buddy. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what I think of when I think of you.
Big J journalism over here, buddy. I got the plaques to prove it now.
A lot of big.
We're discussing something during the break because, you know, Christopher McDonald, the actor who plays Shooter McGavin, came on our show last year, and he broke the news that there was going to be a Happy Gilmore 2 on our station, on our show. And we got the new Happy Gilmore 2 coming out where? The end of next month? Is it July 25th? Happy Gilmore 2. And you asked me real quick before during the break, you said, how do you think that's going to go? And I remember I had strong feelings against the remake of Roadhouse to the point where I didn't see the remake of Roadhouse. And my wife was like, you like Roadhouse, just watch. And she watched the remake of Roadhouse. She's like, it's not very good.
Well, you didn't see the new Twisters movie either,
I didn't see that either. And Liz admitted that she didn't like that movie. It was like, yeah, it was not what it was cooked up to be. I don't care for remakes. I'm okay with sequels. And so for Happy Gilmore 2, the first movie was so insane that I don't know how they can make a bad one. I like continuing the story. I don't like trying to remake the story. Like King of the Hill. I'm excited for King of the Hill coming out in August. And the point is that they're picking up where they left. Well, they're not picking up where they left off. They're picking up years after where they left off, where everybody's like a little bit older. So we'll see how this one goes. But I don't know how you can mess up animation. But yeah, just the short thing of it, I don't like remakes. Like, if they make a new Days of Thunder, don't make a new Days of Thunder. Just do Days of Thunder 2.
Right.
According to Jeff Gordon and Tom Cruise. Just do that.
Still more thunder.
It's more thunder. You don't just have one thunderstorm. There's more thunder that comes right around the corner. Can't bring Dom Simpson back, but everything else you can just about do. Robert Duvall's still with us. At like 90,000 years old, but Robert Duvall's still with us. Hell of an actor. Maybe could do that. I don't know if he's interested in acting, but just pointing out, yeah, I think the Happy Gilmore 2 will be a good one. Kevin O'Connor. He is a man who's a bit of a fire starter when it comes to the NBA. And Kevin O'Connor, he was on the Kevin O'Connor show on Yahoo Sports and said that Darius Garland may have been included in these Kevin Durant talks.
Gambadoro did say to me on the podcast earlier that the Cleveland Cavaliers were one of the sleeper teams for Kevin Durant. That at least shows they have a willingness to take big swings. I heard that they offered Garland in that deal for Kevin Durant. Garland is not Evan Mobley. But to your point, if they were to think about something like that, and when exploring a KD deal, they've at least shown a willingness to think big and go for a big star player. So maybe they would. That's all I'm adding to that.
Audio again, courtesy of the Kevin O'Connor Show, Yahoo Sports. Are the Cavs dealing, or is Durant just Durant?
I think that the Cavs are always going to make the call. I think that is the one thing that we have to understand about this front office. And I don't think that they get to where they're at in terms
of... Make the call on anybody?
On anybody good that's available, they're going to call. It doesn't mean it's going to be a fit, but think about some of the moves that have built this Cavs team, right?
Yeah.
Nobody expected them to find their way into a James Harden trade, but that's what they did. That's how they got Jared Allen. Mm-hmm. Nobody expected them to do a sign-and-trade with the Chicago Bulls for Lauri Markkanen, but that happened. Nobody had them as a potential landing spot for Donovan Mitchell, and then they came out of nowhere and made that trade in September of 2022. Mm-hmm. So Kobe Altman has operated since taking over as the lead decision maker in that way, to where he is always going to make the call. They called the Suns. I don't know that it's necessarily true to say that there was some formal offer that they gave Phoenix. Darius Garland certainly would have been part of that had they made one. I think that they called and they checked in on it because that's what they do. But I don't think that this was ever something that was very close. Like, I don't think that the Cavs were almost trading for Kevin Durant.
I agree with you.
I think they checked in and realized, okay, this is not just trading Darius Garland for Kevin Durant. You're trading Darius Garland. Isaac Okoro would have needed to be part of that deal, which everybody would be fine with. Then they would have also had to trade DeAndre Hunter or Jared Allen, because you have to trade, essentially, if you're going to land Kevin Durant, you have to send out roughly $70 million in salary to get back his $54 million because of the restrictions they have of being a second apron team. It was not something that was going to happen, but they called and checked in because that's what they do.
I might have to come out and admit that it's a tank for another team in town coming up at 6:43 this morning. 216-474-0092. So, well, when it comes to like Kevin Durant, like there is a special 1%. Like, I still think Kevin Durant is a tremendous basketball player. Like, I know that there's, we got Nick on Sundays with Daryl, and Nick keeps talking about bringing back LeBron. I'm not trying to open up that can of worms with you right now. What I'm saying, though, is that there still is players that are of an advanced age that are significant. It's just, what are you willing to deal with when it comes to that significance? LeBron has his own set of circumstances. That's why I just put that one on the shelf for another day. I'm sure it'll get brought up naturally, but I put that on the shelf for another day. When it comes to Kevin Durant, I still think, is a lot better than what people realize. I just think that a lot of people look at him as a malcontent and a problem because he is going on his fifth team. And I think because he's been on so many teams, I think he's torpedoed his own legacy.
I think so, to an extent, too.
To basketball, to inside basketball fans, people who are to basketball first fans, I think that they think that that's a dumb statement. I know that he's a great player. I know he's a one percenter. I know he's easily a Hall of Famer, but who isn't at this point? But I think he's been that special group of players. But I think to a general fan, when they look back at this generation, they'll think LeBron, they'll think Steph, they'll think Giannis, they'll think a couple other players. And then it will be, oh, yeah, Kevin Durant. Like, when you're, oh, yeah, that guy, instead of top of mind, I think you hurt your own legacy. That pointed out, I still think he's a tremendous basketball player and would certainly help out the Cleveland Cavaliers. But is he, I have to ask this, does he still have the killer instinct to be the type of leader on a team that's trying to go for the gusto? That was the whole Houston argument that happened yesterday with a lot of folks out there, which you don't know if that's still his case. I mean, he's not, the whole argument with Gary Payton on the sidelines, like, yeah, you ain't Gary Payton at 38 years old. You ain't where he was. But at the same time, while you're great, are you willing to make the sacrifices that are needed to take that team to the finals?
I don't think that I think if you're asking Kevin Durant to come in and be the leader, you're misguided.
You are absolutely misguided.
I think that is something that you have to be careful about.
Yes.
Like, I do not think that is a position that you want to be in as a franchise. And Houston, maybe you can make the case that Ime Udoka is the leader in Houston.
But
because he's the guy that set that culture. That's a young team that hasn't necessarily had a leader. Maybe it was Dylan Brooks and now he's gone, obviously.
Is that why? And I think that that's maybe part of the reason why the Cavaliers were trying to maybe see if they could do anything. Now, I don't believe anything that was going to happen because of the owners. But was that part of the reason? Because if you look at the Cavs, the unquestioned leader is Donovan Mitchell.
Right.
Without question, would it be a perfect situation for him? Because Giannis, I think, is a very dominant personality behind the scenes and is a person that's going to have things done his way. I think that there's other, and you may disagree with that. I think there's other guys that they have that killer instinct and you're going to do things their way. I don't find Kevin Durant to be that guy. And so maybe when it comes to one percenters, like, okay, this might actually be the perfect trade scenario where if it were 28 other teams that they could possibly trade with other than the Phoenix Suns, maybe they would have got a deal done for Kevin Durant this summer.
See, I don't think that's true just because I think things are so complicated with what they would have had to do.
And they can't offer the picks?
Because, one, they can't offer the picks. They would have had to send out so much money. The owner's thing, I think, is a conversation worth having. Like, mm-hmm. I would be surprised if the Suns and the Cavs are in the business of making trades with Matt Ishbia owning that team and Dan Gilbert owning this one. And I do, the one thing I'll push back on about Durant behind the scenes, it's not just the number of teams he's played for. Think of how many coaches he's played for in the last 5 years.
Been a lot.
Because that is part of it too. And not to say that Kevin Durant has gotten all these guys fired, because I don't think that would exactly be a fair statement, but I do think that you have to look at it and say, okay, well, what happened in Brooklyn? Oh, the guy who is the head coach of the Cavs now was fired partially because of Kevin Durant. I think it's fair to say. Then he leaves Brooklyn. How many coaches did he play for in Phoenix? He played for three different coaches in 3 years there.
Yeah.
That's something that you have to look at and say, okay, is this really, is the juice worth the squeeze here? Kevin Durant is a Hall of Fame basketball player. He's a top 20 guy all time. I think it's probably fair to say.
But wouldn't they have talked to Kenny at all before they were interested in any of this when it comes to, all right, Darius Garland is a two-time All-Star, a great young player. He's not Kevin Durant. He never will be Kevin Durant, for crying out loud. Let's not be crazy here. Sure. I know I've defended him like nuts, but good God. And Kevin Durant is an all-timer. Durant, I don't think, wants leadership. Yes, there's a history there with him and Kenny Atkinson, but when you have the leadership group of Donovan Mitchell being in his own right, and then the people he keeps close around him, possibly that would be something that would work. That's why I think, like, hey, the Cavs being involved in that, I don't think it's as surprising as what some people may think.
No, I don't think
it's... And I don't think it's as desperate as what some people might think either.
Well, and I don't think it was realistic to ever happen, too. That is the other thing. And mm-hmm. I think part of when you make these calls, and part of the way that the Cavs have built their rosters by doing what? By jumping into an existing trade and finding a way to better themselves as a third part of that deal. And maybe that is something that could have happened there. It doesn't seem like this trade is going to expand from two teams to anything bigger, but that is something that could have happened too. And I don't think that you get to that point unless you make the call early too. And I think that's something Kobe Altman has been very good at in his time as the lead decision maker for the Cavs.
I'm going to clear the lane for Jason here, I think. Because I think I agree with you. But you seem... I'm going to give you the chance to really get going here. What?
I don't know where you're going with this, but go ahead.
I told you what I was going to... You got to fall... You know what?
I
One of
ADD.
These damn days when you fill in, I'm just going to go, here you go. Here you go. I'm going to let you bring us in and out, and I'm just going to fill in on what you say.
I'm reading things.
You're reading what?
I'm preparing for the show.
Are you preparing for this show?
Yes.
Well, the show's been going on for 46 minutes
and
now. Your preparation should be done.
And there's new segments coming.
Then if you were preparing, you would have known what segment we're about to do now, don't you?
I have ADD.
Daryl Ryder going to join us. See, this is where we go into a circle. Daryl Ryder joins us at 7:22 this morning. How long until that new stadium is going to be built? And whether or not we are overrating or underrating a certain person with the Cleveland Browns. Hold off on that, Jason. I want to play some audio here where I think I get what they're saying.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Uh-huh. Okay. I think I get what they're saying.
ADD'd it up.
I think these guys are looking for someone they trust, and I think that's why they feel they're stuck. Here is Nick and Jonathan, where they say they're surprised how the Cavs narrative has shifted so heavily to go towards Donovan Mitchell. Yes, Donovan Mitchell. Donovan, we are busking for the audio about Donovan Mitchell.
I just think it's really interesting that we've gone from, is Donovan and the rest of the team's timeline, meaning like it's Donovan and then the rest of the team, and now it's Donovan and the rest of the team from, none of those guys are ready, let's build around Donovan. I think that's an interesting change that has happened subtly over the last 3 years.
Well, I mean, I do think a lot of people that were around this Cavs team day in, day out, I think they just left this postseason being very impressed with the not only the determination, but really what seemed like that championship level mentality that Chris is offering up, despite the fact that Donovan's never made it out of the second round of the postseason. You could tell people were very impressed with the fortitude and the grit that he showed.
All right, Jason, what's your thoughts?
Who are these people saying that the Cavs need to build around Donovan? Who are they? Where's this narrative?
Maybe they're listeners, they're callers.
That is just not accurate.
Remember, like, Jason, we spend a lot more time with the average person than you do.
The president of basketball operations said after the season ended, we are going to go as a franchise as Evan is going to go. This is not about Donovan. You know how far a Donovan Mitchell led team will take you. The second round. We have 8 years and two franchises of proof. This is about Evan. This is about Evan's growth and the development will determine how far this team goes. This is not about building around Donovan.
For the record, before this all gets mixed up and confusing here, I want to show everybody for the record, I actually agree with Jason on that wholeheartedly. I remember when Kobe Altman had said that, and I agree with you tremendously about Evan Mobley. But I think the reason they say that is it's been a long time since we've heard Kobe Altman. I mean, I know it hasn't been that long, but it's been long enough where people kind of forget.
2 months feels like 20 years now.
Because you know why? Because we've been talking about trades for other guys.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about trading Darius Garland, your first thought, for a lot of fans, is who, when you trade Darius Garland, fits with Donovan? And I know that's not the right thing, but that's why I think that they're talking about this. Now, I didn't hear very much else of that. I was running around yesterday.
Yeah.
But let me go ahead and let me try to defend the boys for a moment here.
I'm not going to kill them.
Well, I think you want to.
No, I'm not.
Let me defend the boys for a moment here. I think it comes down to trust. It's been 2 months since they bounced out of the finals. And injuries played into it. Plenty of excuses play into it. And since then, we've been talking about it. And I think a lot of folks have been wanting to say here and there that, yeah, man, Evan's got to be the guy. I think you and I on Monday said they're only going to go as far as Evan takes them here very, very shortly. So if you have finals aspirations, Evan's going to have to grow up and grow up in a hurry. I think he's between the ears, I think he's a perfectly fine young man. Growing up, I mean, physically dominating in the post, knowing that he can be dominant, those sort of things that we talk about with Evan. I think it's a trust issue. I think everybody trusts Donovan Mitchell, and I think they trust nobody else. They don't trust Jared Allen. They don't trust Darius Garland. And they want to trust Evan Mobley, but they know that Evan Mobley is meek, and I think that they're afraid that they're going to be wrong about it. That's why I think that you're hearing all this Donovan Mitchell stuff. Jason, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But it comes down to trust.
Then enjoy the second round, because that's where you're going.
I agree with you.
But so you got to break out of it. Like you have to, I get it. And frankly, I think the Cavs have to trust Evan Mobley more. I think Donovan and Darius have to trust Evan more. And Donovan took a step back in his role this year, in part because I believe he knew this. He knew that he had to take less oxygen so Evan could take more. But that has to continue. And the fact that they are two ball dominant guards, it is a fair question to say, well, how is Evan going to find more oxygen in the offense when you're playing with two ball-dominant guards? And I'll go back to the old championship team when Ty Lue walked in and basically told Kyrie, Kevin eats first. You eat last. You're the last one to the bowl because mm-hmm. you've got the ball in your hands. Kevin goes first. LeBron can get his whenever he wants, and then you go. And it may be time to have that conversation with Donovan and Darius to where they tell Darius, Evan eats first. You're the last one to the bowl. And that doesn't make you any less important to the team, but it just sets a hierarchy in terms of getting these guys into the flow of the game, getting Evan comfortable with the ball in his hands. I think Evan can initiate and create more than he's been given opportunities to. And really, you're not going to know until you give it a chance to let it happen. And we saw the growth in Evan last year. He took a massive leap in his game. He has to take another massive leap this year. I think he's capable of doing it. Time will tell.
I think he's capable of doing it, and I think that this injury, this toe injury at the beginning of the season could be a blessing in disguise. And the reason I say that is because without Darius out there, there's no clog, which is a nasty thing to say, but it's true. There's no Darius out there. There's no clog. That means the offense has to be going to Evan Mobley a lot to provide spacing, to provide any open shots for Donovan or Max Strus if he's still here or God knows who else, right? So I think that with Evan there and no Darius at the beginning of the season, say that Darius were to miss, I'm not in any hurry to bring him back, and I certainly don't think the Cavs are in any hurry to bring him back. So say he misses a month of the first season.
Fine.
You're by that time, you've gone through training camp, you've gone through the few preseason games and the first month of the season, you're building something here. So Darius is going to have to understand when he comes back, this is going to be more through Evan's eyes now. This offense is going to be run through him. So Darius is going to have to fit in. So naturally, I think you may have a better fit. The challenge is still going to be on Darius. But this is why I keep going back to, when we talk about trading guys, I'm not hearing nearly enough about Jared Allen. I think you can get more quality and more realistic quality maybe for a guy like Jared Allen than you can for Darius Garland, because it still comes down to the same old thing. You can trade me 35-year-old journeymen that I'm not sure are going to be around by the time we get to April and May. You can do that, and you'll make my usual co-host pretty excited about that. Or you could try to trade him for a wing. Except who am I going to trade him for a wing for when we're all talking about who wants to have a 6'2 guard? You know, the Cavs fans don't even want a 6'2 guard that's been a two-time All-Star. So why is Sam Presti or anybody else going to want that guy?
Well, you can have a 6'2 guard if the guard next to him is 6'6", 6'7", 6'8". It's a little bit easier of a fit. The problem here is the fact that they're both undersized. That's the problem. The Jared thing is interesting to me because, I mean, I wrote it after the season. I don't know how you bring him back. It's 3 years in a row he's disappointed you in the postseason. The Knicks series, obviously everyone remembers that. Last year, the whole rib injury, and we wrote about it, and not taking the injection, and like, I don't even want to get back into that.
Yeah, it's ugly.
And then this, now he vanished at the end of the Pacers series. But if you move, you don't want to trade a guy just to trade a guy, because Jared is very valuable to this team and what he does, particularly on the defensive end. So you can't make a trade just for the sake of making a trade. But it is a little bit easier, I think, to make the money match, which is the world they're in, when he's making $20 million compared to the money that Darius is making.
Yes.
And on top of that, you can play with Evan and four guys around him and not really miss a lot. Where if you take Darius out of this, you just created now another hole that you have to go backfill.
My issue, I think we've spoken so much and spoken so passionately about, it's almost like what the president said the other day. You've spoken so much and so passionately for a long time that some fans don't know what the bleep they're doing. And do you understand that? Like, we've talked about Darius so much. I'm going, Darius has been a problem. His health, ball getting stuck, whatever it is, it's been an issue, yes. But I think the bigger issue is with Jared Allen. And if we get halfway through the year, if we get to the trade deadline in February, and Evan's kicking ass offensively, and I find my opportunity to help in along the margins, I don't think there's going to be blockbusters here for this team because they're so close to the apron. I think if you can find help across the margins, then I think that that's where you're really going to help out your basketball team. Did you know I'm Facebook friends with Joey's dad? The guy who cuts our videos? Jason Lloyd in for Anthony Lima today. I just realized that. How do you think of that, Owen?
Well, he told us, because he came on the podcast when he first came in, Joey, right?
Yes.
Said his cousin and you have a big interaction, right?
Yes. His cousin's a hoot, man. It's a hoot. Oh. Twitter reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Yes.
So I guess Joey's whole family is getting in on the act before Joey will ever
There's also one who's going into coaching as well. Now, I don't know if that's a brother of Joey or not. There's Gino that looks like he's going into coaching. Do we want to rank Joey's family? Do we want to do that?
I don't know how to say his last name.
Okay. Korzenowski. We should do a power rankings on how to pronounce his last name. His dad, his cousin, and Gino.
Joey doesn't make the list.
And Joey goes out of his way to get me killed on the internet, so...
Well, I like him already.
You go and give your flowers to everyone.
You're sweaty. Look at you.
I had to walk quite a ways.
You are sweating your ass off.
You look like you just pulled. You just walked up the fairway on the 18th.
It's hot out there.
You look like
a
train wreck.
Dabs of sweat.
You sure?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes. I'm fine. Best shape of my life.
You look like Chris Farley at 1:29 in the morning at the end of an SNL episode.
You want to go out there and race right now? I'll race you in these.
I'm not racing. I'm glad you wore decent clothes. Dudes. I'm glad you actually wore decent clothes to work today.
They weren't for you.
Instead of your pajamas.
I did have a robe I was going to grab on the way out the door just to mess with you.
I was going to be upset with you. You're a grown man, for crying out loud. A father of what, three?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Daryl Ryder, 7:22 this morning. Is Kevin Stefanski overrated or underrated? Are we carrying water for Kevin Stefanski? Is he overrated, underrated? What? Now, I've called you the Culligan man many, many times over for Kevin. Now, all jokes aside, I mean, with this show has been pretty pro-Kevin in the past. Pro Football Focus, PFF, they had their top 10 rankings of the coaches. And a lot of people were surprised that they saw a coach of a 3-14 team here at number 10 overall in Kevin Stefanski. Because I'm going, man, Browns fans and Steelers fans... Personally, they don't have a lot in common. Geographically, they have a lot in common. We're very close. But
that
they got
was
this
of returning coaches.
Yeah.
Yes, returning coaches.
Because Mike Vrabel is not on that list.
Well,
and had they just included everyone that is coaching currently.
Well, if you want me to go down
Kevin
that.
Would not be in the top 10.
You want me to go ahead and go down and make that mistake again like I did with Freddie Kitchens and Mike Vrabel that day?
It won you the bad take tournament.
I was an emotional boy that day. So he comes in at number 10 overall. And a lot of people, how can a guy at 3 wins, 3-14 be? See, this is why, you know, so many people, and I had this argument yesterday with Danny. I got to judge him on something. I want to feel whether it's right or wrong, because I think Browns fans, Steelers fans and Browns fans have this in common. They are both critical of their head coach to the point of wanting that guy to go. I think the approval rating it kept with Kevin Stefanski as we're getting ready to go into the year is probably hovering somewhere around 40%. I think it's higher than Andrew Berry's right now going into the year. But I think that a Browns fan looks at that list and sees and goes, man, you got to be like, what more has to happen? It's like, okay, this year is the ultimate year for Kevin. It's not even about playoffs to me. It's certainly not about Super Bowls to me or anything like that. I'm going, man, I have had this knockdown, drag out argument every year for the last 6 years, and something's going to have to give. Something's going to happen. Clearly, he either can help a quarterback and can get that guy right if that guy's able to work with him, or he's definitely overrated and we've been wasting our time. One of the two. Like, if they get to like 7-8 wins somewhere, and you have a young guy play well, or anybody play well in this group for that matter, it's like, all right, guys, there's definitely something here that the guy does well. We can't keep ripping on Kevin Stefanski all the time. But if they go out and they're a 3-win football team again, and he looks like he's powerless over all this stuff, which I don't know how the defending coach of the year has his power seemingly taken away from him. That's a totally different conversation. I mean, I'm going to lose my mind. I need some clarity to be able to identify what's good and what's not with the Cleveland Browns.
I think they're closer to a 3-win team than an 8-win team.
Which is what scares me too, yes. So at the end of this, if I make it, see what makes me fearful, because I don't know. I know what I've said about him in the past. I've blamed Deshaun Watson for Deshaun Watson's problems. And the stories that came out with Bill O'Brien basically having to run this offense that nobody else would run in the NFL because he doesn't know how to read defenses or couldn't watch film or one of the other ones. I've put it on Deshaun Watson. I didn't know why they took away his play calling capabilities. I don't know why, for all these reasons, that they had to make these changes. I think that that's part of the reason why Bill Callahan just left. And he had a great excuse for it to go coach with his son, because I think he saw the writing on the wall and he didn't agree with it.
Yes.
And now you have, I think Mike Bloomgren's going to be a really good coach for this football team on their offensive line. I think that we'll see what Tommy Rees can do, but I'm more confident that the offense is really in the hands of Kevin Stefanski here. It's like, hey, man, I'm not even asking for the world, but it does seem to feel like it's put up or shut up time. How many different quarterbacks do we have to go through? And if one of these guys look good, like really good at some point, it's like, okay, now he gets his credit, and we know that there's been a lot of things that have been dumped into his lap over 6 years.
And we said when I was in Monday, we agreed that they're looking to find their quarterback next year.
Yes.
So what if these guys don't look good? Are you going to hold it against them?
Someone's going to have to hold it against them, and somehow, did he not like Dylan Gabriel?
Yeah, he did.
He loved Dylan Gabriel, didn't he?
Well,
so you're going to have to hold it against him if Dylan Gabriel goes out there and looks listless.
I mean, if you really love Dylan Gabriel, why don't you take him with the third overall pick?
Well, because that's probably insane to take him with the third overall. It was the second overall pick, wasn't it?
If you love him. I'm sorry, yeah. But if you love him. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's levels to this. Yeah, you may like them for what you have to be. You can only shop at the groceries that are available.
Do you think that he was overdrafted in the third round?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So he's still really, really, maybe not loved, but he really liked Dylan Gabriel.
But
well, you're taking a guy in the third round. You're eventually going to play him this year from what it seems. And there's a lot of folks outside of the building who are really uncomfortable with that. Now, there's definitely players in that locker room who are like, this kid knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He knows this offense and he knows this nomenclature. And if he were 6'5", there'd be no question about it, but he's not. If he goes out there and he looks bad, you know we're going to get inundated, and I have no fight against him going, hey, what, this guy thinks he knows quarterbacks. He goes out there and he takes a 5'10 quarterback and the guy can't see over the line and he's throwing pick after pick after pick. If you can't help out Shedeur Sanders, he's an incredibly popular quarterback, it's going to be hard to make an argument for him. It's just, it's been 6 years. And I think that He's made quarterbacks that I think have been on the margins play better. Yeah, go back to 2020 with Baker. Do it. Say it. Feel it. But with the mess that's become the Deshaun Watson saga, like somebody has to answer to that at some point with this fan base.
Then they should have fired him after last year. They should have fired everybody after last year.
But I didn't want him to.
I didn't either.
Least, but I say going into this year, there has to be something.
But if
I can't just keep repeating it.
But you know that this year is the collateral damage of the awful mistake that was Deshaun. This year is you gotta pay the bill for that. That's what this season is. So why would you fire him now? If you were going to fire him after last season, because last season was an absolute disaster for everybody in the building.
But I still think you could look at this season at if they win like 6 or 7 games. And I know you're saying it's closer to 3 wins, and I think a lot of people would agree with you. You win 6 or 7 games this year, and I don't think that if you win 6 or 7 games, any of these quarterbacks are probably going to like the quarterback of your future. But if Dylan Gabriel shows you something, I could very well sit here and say, yeah, Dylan Gabriel showed me something, and I'm still drafting a quarterback in the first round next year, and I'm still putting Kevin Stefanski with that quarterback. Because if he can get this, this, and this from any one of these 4 guys, then I think he's proven to everybody that he can work with decent quarterbacks if the quarterback's able to help himself.
I mean, he got P.J. Walker to look functional as an NFL quarterback.
But we don't want to remember that. Because the biggest investment that they made, $235 million and 3 first-round picks, has been listless.
And he has to wear some of that. They all do. All of them over there have to wear that. And that's why I said, if you want to hold them accountable for Deshaun, then why are they still here? You should have fired them last year. But is now that you kept them, you can't, like, what's the sense in firing them now? You know they're going to be bad. Why would you fire them now?
But part of the reason, and I think about timing with everything on this, is it because he's still here? Because he'll probably be gone by next June.
Deshaun?
Yes.
No, so, I don't think it's it didn't work. Like, the owner came out and said it didn't work.
But you can't get rid of him yet. So he's more than likely gone by next June.
Yeah.
So if he's more than likely gone by next June, I mean, off the salary looks like it'll never come off the books.
We'll see. I hear what you're saying.
You're not going to be gone by next June?
With the cap? I think that's a possibility, but I can't sit here and say definitively.
Okay, fair enough. But more than likely, if he were gone by next June,
yeah,
you could sit there and go, well, new general manager, new head coach. We've got a new quarterback coming in. He'll be post June 1st. Goodbye. And then we can go on. Or I could look at it and go, well, he may be gone anyway post June 1st, the quarterback. I could see that he did a good job with Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett was on the scrap heap. You got Nick Sirianni, who's one of the greatest peacockers of all time. But you got something out of Kenny Pickett there. Congratulations, you did well. You got one more little ride out of Joe Flacco. You got shook out what was ever left in the tank, and you were able to get it there. And then one of these 2 rookie quarterbacks ended up being composed and conducted the offense well and got guys to trust him throughout the year. And they might not. None of those guys may be the future for this football team, but I could look at it in the end and go, I trust Kevin. I want Kevin to lead it going forward with this next quarterback. We may use both our picks on to go get. That, I think, is one of these goals that I think that people have to set for this football team this year.
I wholeheartedly
finding
agree.
Finding some clarity.
But it all usually comes down to just wins. That's what people are. That's how they're going to judge them, by his wins. And I don't think this is a season.
And I'm saying 6 or 7 wins. It's not like I'm asking for the world here, brother.
And I still think that's a high bar.
There are some people out there saying that we ain't got the pills to say what Ross Tucker is saying about Shador Sanders. Here's Ross Tucker about Shador and his latest run-ins with the law. Is it run-ins with the law? Do I say it like that?
Yeah.
All right. No. Run-ins with the law. Scary.
Last week, when it came out that he got a speeding ticket, I said it's not really that big a deal. I feel very differently about it now. The logic or the mindset to have gotten a speeding ticket and then less than 2 weeks later, you're driving over 100 miles an hour, over 40 miles an hour over the speed limit, less than 2 weeks after you just got a ticket. I don't know if that's entitlement or immaturity. There's got to be some teams that are feeling very good right now that they didn't draft him. There are definitely franchise quarterbacks that have had success after making mistakes like this, but not many. I mean, not many that have the mindset, whatever that is, to do something like this twice in that short of a time frame, to not learn from the mistake 2 weeks earlier. It's honestly like mind-boggling to me.
Okay, I'm just going to come out and ask you guys. If Shedeur Sanders played for the Carolina Panthers, would I be going, eh, it's a speeding ticket? It is 40 over. I want to ask you guys, because are we being, we asked this question yesterday. I got Ross Tucker saying that, which was like, oh, gosh, Ross. But then they asked Aubrey Breer on the afternoon show, because we asked if we were being too soft on Shedeur yesterday, and then they talked about it on Afternoon Drive with Aubrey Breer, SI.
You made your bed, now you lie in it. You know what I mean? Like, this is sort of what Shedeur, for better or worse, attracted when he was in college. You know, first at Jackson State and then at Colorado. And when you broadcast your life this way, and, like, you've naturally got star power because of who your dad is, and you lean this hard into it, well, then everything is going to be a bigger deal. It just sort of is what it is. I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't be a big deal if he didn't do all the extra stuff, because his last name is Sanders, so that's part of it. But he also hasn't shied away from some of the benefits he gets from his last name. And so this is the other side of that double-edged sword.
So I think the Browns need to try to win, begin the year.
Of course.
But I also know that this is probably a team that's not going to be winning a lot of games by the end of the year.
Also true.
And I also know that as of right now, June 25th, they're drafting a quarterback in April of 2026.
Correct.
Now they have a whole year to change that opinion.
Yes.
But as of right now, they're taking somebody with one of those two picks, or they're moving up with both of those picks to take a quarterback in 2026. So I'm stuck in this weird moment of quarterback, not purgatory, but house money. And I'm thinking, if he's any problem, he just won't be here next year.
Right.
They'll invest in the rookie. So there's so many times where I'm going, well, it's house money. I'm like, well, can this be a distraction? I don't know. Are fifth-round picks who getting pulled over for speeding a distraction? Are they really a distraction? I think, can I make it a distraction? I can make just about anything a distraction. Is it really a distraction? Am I holding back from what I really want to say? I'm not holding back a damn thing. It's a speeding ticket. It was not the smartest thing to do. It was pretty dumb. But he will pay his fine. Hopefully he'll pay his fine. I mean, I don't know. But he'll pay his fine, and hopefully we'll all just move on from something like this. And I'm seeing, well, you know, this is why teams, you know, didn't want to be a part of it. Why? Is it because, now, is this the difference? Because I'm going to tell you right now, Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, hand to God, aren't checking out what the Shedeurians are saying to them on Twitter.
Right.
They do not care. Guys like Ross and guys like me, well, I'll full on admit, it does get a little bit annoying. Ken's a hater. He hates Shedeur. Nope. No, you don't know what you're talking about. You just dropped in here, and I don't even know if you're a real account or if you're anything like that. No, Ken, you hate Shedeur Sanders. You're a media and you're a hater. No, I don't hate the guy. Certainly don't hate the guy. Hope he does well, actually. He's a great story, and I think it'd be a lot of fun if he actually did well. And I'd like to use those two first-round picks on weapons next year instead of having to wait another year to go out and get wide receivers that are worth a damn at all, especially if we take one certain quarterback that I ain't going to talk about right now. So I'd love to do all that, but no, you're a hit. No. That does get annoying. I will admit to you there.
Yes.
But the Browns are not checking Twitter and MySpace and MySpace no more. Twitter and TikTok and
Facebook.
And Facebook comments and Instagram comments. The guys in charge don't care. So if they don't allow it to be a distraction, it won't be a distraction. That's why it's like, hey, man, for everybody's good, like, no comments about starting week one. None of that other stupid stuff. I mean what I say about this. Now, if he were a starter for the – if he were a player for the Pittsburgh Steelers, hey, I'm a person who likes to take advantage and say mean-spirited stuff about the Pittsburgh Steelers. You guys know me as well as I know myself, and you know that I would probably be taking pot shots right now. Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. But I'll even say this. If he played for Cincinnati or Baltimore, for that matter, I probably wouldn't even care.
And
I probably wouldn't even care.
This would be a much bigger deal if he weren't a fifth-round pick, too. That's the other thing that I keep coming back to. If they would have taken Shedeur Sanders in the first round, yes, big deal. Would feel probably different about it. But you brought up the house money aspect of things. It is that. He's a fifth-round pick. He's not expected to be successful here based on where he was drafted. Yes, this is very immature, and I think that when you are his age, especially when you have a last name like his and you have the popularity that he has, I do think that he probably walks around with a sense of invincibility.
The only thing that bothers me out of the entire thing, other than, yeah, you know, I know, you could have killed somebody, hurt somebody. I know. It's not good to be going 40 miles over the speed limit. Okay, I get that. But outside of that, in sports world, the only thing that has bothered me throughout what's become a 2-week saga now over a speeding ticket, The only thing that's bothered me at all has been the excuse of his dad not being around him. Because if he can't function as an adult without his dad there, then we might as well. I'm serious. We might as well just move on now.
Speeding ticket. That's no speeding only ticket. Doesn't
that's
matter.
The only and he didn't say a word about his dad being there. Now we'll check all the podcasts he may be on and all the media, the legendary media that he may have. But if he doesn't mention his dad, as long as he doesn't mention his dad, then I ain't going to really be bothered by it. I'm more bothered by the people like Eric Mangini and a couple other ones who are saying, well, you know, this is the first time he isn't around his father. And if Eric Mangini might be telling me the truth and I just don't see it yet, well, I'm going to be really bothered by it. So I'm going to take nasty shots at Eric Mangini over it. But I'm telling you, of the things that bother me, which it doesn't, if it's his dad ain't around, well, speeding tickets are just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
If his dad ain't around him, he's going to go out and he's going to act like a moron. He's not going to be able to process the offense. And all the Shadorians out there that are going to be upset on the internet, they'll just blame the Browns and they'll move on with Shador when we move on to another quarterback. So that's the only thing that bothers me. Don't sit there and tell me about daddy being here or daddy not being here. You're 23 years old. He's a grown man. And I hope that he knows better than anybody. Like, yeah, you know what? Maybe you didn't get the chance to sow your wild oats. That ain't on me. And that ain't on Browns fans. And that's certainly not even on the Cleveland Browns for taking you on that case. He's a fifth round pick. And if he can't keep his head straight between April and the beginning of the season, then hell, we'll just move on.
And you hope this
I'm
is
just
the
willing
thing.
To move on.
You hope
but
this
I,
is the
I don't
thing.
Think that's the, I don't want to believe that's the case with his dad not being around him.
Well, and you hope that this is a thing that makes him grow up a little bit because we've all been that age, right?
Yeah.
Not everything you did at 23 or I did at 23 you're super proud of. I'm sure he's not super proud of this, but you hope that he grows up because of this. This has to be one of those moments because everyone's going to have them. They're just not all in the spotlight the way that this is. I'm sure at some point when you were that age, Ken, you drove faster than you should have.
I had a beat the hell old truck that I don't think could get up to 102, 101.
Maybe not 101, but I'm sure it went above the speed limit.
Yeah, no, I got speeding tickets.
Right? Like, yeah. We've all been there before to a certain extent. We just weren't Shador Sanders, so it wasn't a big deal in the big scheme of things.
I think people are confusing soft with, if you're talking about people in Cleveland, if you're talking about radio show hosts, I can't speak for any others other than the guys that we have here at this station. I think you're finding a lot of guys. Even Nick. Nick was a guy who was a very big detractor of Shador Sanders. I think you're finding a lot of guys who are being hopeful. And they just hope that some way, because I'm telling you, man, if this guy hits, or him or Dylan Gabriel for that matter, because I know there's another rookie out there that people don't want to admit that if they were starting a quarterback week one that was a rookie, it would be Dylan Gabriel right now over Shador Sanders. You can not want to believe that all you want, but it's the truth. They're hopeful that either one of these guys, and yes, definitely I would say especially Shador, because he's the topic of conversation 9 times out of 10 when it comes to the rookies, that he actually does hit. Because if he does hit, plays well, then I'm laughing. I got this fifth-round quarterback that's worth investing in. I have 2 first-round picks next year. I can hit the ground running with this. I don't have to fire anybody. I don't have to go over the terrible searches of looking for head coaches and looking for general managers, which that conversation sucks. I don't have to do any of that stuff. So, yeah, you'll probably find more hopeful people in Cleveland than you have found with all the other ones. And for the other outside detractors or anything like that, well, that's fine. That's perfectly fine to have that opinion on that. The only thing that scares me is that whole conversation about dad being here or not being here. Because if that ends up being true, right now, I can't say that it's not because I got to hear from Shador first. But if that ends up being true, well, then this has all just been a bunch of hot air over the last 3 months. And it's going to continue to be that way until we kick off in September. Because if that's the case, then he will definitely drown himself out of the league if he can't be anywhere without his dad as an adult. Andres Jimenez is batting, what, 192? 172?
It's probably lower now. It was 192 when the game started.
So, yeah, I'm watching last night, and I saw you. Owen was at the game last night. Danny Cunningham's in for Tone today. You were at the game last night.
Yeah.
And Miles Straw came up to bat, and there was like a smattering of whatever. And then Andres Jimenez came up to bat, and there was a decent, you said a decent. I actually had the sound on. I felt it was a decent.
Out where I was out in left field, and there was, you know.
Ovation, yeah.
People weren't yelling, but you got just a normal clapping.
Yeah. It's like, hey, you played for the Guardians. And I
Gold Gloves here.
I saw him, and I mean, he's not good this year.
No.
It's been a rough season. I mean, basically, he had a great opening weekend of baseball, and the rest has been terrible. And I just said, man, Guardians were right on that one. And immediately I get inundated with people. Well, they gave him a $100 million contract. They gave him a $100 million contract. I go, well, they, I understand that, but they also still corrected that. And then I got inundated with people going, have you seen your lineup lately? I'm going, well, wait, I think our lineup isn't, I didn't make that as a defense of our lineup. I think that he would be a net negative and you would be even more upset that he was batting so badly in such a bad lineup. I think you'd be even more frustrated with the Guardians lineup if Jimenez was part of it and was batting the way he is. I mean, Andres is batting, he's at 192 now. Yes, he was one for five yesterday. If he was batting that way on this club, making that money, I think you'd be pulling your hair out.
It'd be incredibly toxic.
I'm not giving, maybe it's almost the same thing with Andrew Berry. Like if DeJuan Jones goes out there and becomes a left tackle and like a really good left tackle, hey, you found a guy in the fourth round. You also drafted Jed Wills and you gave him 5 years and the guy doesn't even like football. So you get a bit of credit, but you get some of that pulled back because you didn't just find a fourth round gem. You found a guy to replace the guy you drafted number 10 overall when you could have had Tristan Wirfs.
Right. That's the issue.
And for the Guardians, it's like, I know that sometimes we overdo the wizards of trades and all that other stuff, but I'm going, oh, wait a minute. I got Slade Ciccone right now from the Arizona deal. He's looking good. Birthday was yesterday, by the way. Happy birthday. He's, what, 26 now? He's a young man, young, supple. See what he does. And I have more on that coming up at 7:20. Not about how him being supple, but part of their rotation, by the way.
Oh.
I have more on that coming up at 7:20. You have Slade Ciccone from that trade. Okay, mm-hmm. There's a little check mark for you. And then I got out from under this contract of Andrés Giménez when people were upset about it, and they clearly knew more about it than a lot of what I know that there were some questions about him before the year, so I didn't kill him for it, but I knew that they were going to take heat and be called a salary dump. It's like, hey, man, he's bat 192. And he's down at ninth in their order right now. Yeah. It ain't good, brother.
I think the issue with it, with a lot of fans, isn't that they made that trade, because I'm with you. I think that was a good trade. I think they got out from under what was at the time a bad contract and now looks even worse.
Yeah, you get credit for recognizing it and getting the hell out of there before it becomes an albatross that you can't escape from.
But I think the thing that people are frustrated with is, well, now all of this extra money that was budgeted to be used isn't being used anywhere else. And I think that is the thing that people have
issue with.
But I don't
know if they have that extra money. I don't know. See, I can't accuse them of having money. I don't know if they have it. I don't know if they have it. Because they've spent salary on television deals before. And yes, they went for the gusto, quote unquote, when they spent to the middle in 2017, which is still not going all in, but for us it feels like it's all in. So fine, call it all in if you want to, if we're splitting hairs. But when I'm hearing that a TV deal went from $55 million to somewhere in the neighborhood of rumored to be $15 million, well, that's a huge loss right there.
It is a big difference.
And so I can't say like, oh, you saved $80 million and now you're just holding on to the $80 million. I don't know if the money's there. I don't know. I know that they made a bad investment on Andrés Giménez. I keep wanting to call him Asdrubal Cabrera for whatever reason. They made a bad investment on Andrés Giménez, and they made the deal to get rid of Andrés Giménez, and it ended up being like you get a little bit of credit for recognizing a bad deal and getting out from under it before it becomes a problem for you.
I think the frustration is there was thinking from a lot of fans that when that trade happened, okay, they're going to extend Stephen Kwan and we'll feel better about this. And then the other aspect of things too.
But why would they extend Stephen Kwan when he has two more years of arbitration? I argued this with Jason.
Because
the other
you would
day.
Like to have Stephen Kwan on your roster for more than just two more
you
years.
Would,
because if he has two more years of arbitration, what does that mean in Cleveland?
Okay,
Ken?
But
it means he has one more year in Cleveland because they're not going to lose him for nothing.
Is he a guy that I invest long term in? When he's a leadoff hitter, he's good in the outfield. He is a good leadoff hitter. Yes, that's true. But if he's a station to station player, which he is, which one am I more likely to invest in? I think that they would rather invest in either pitching or they'd rather invest in a bopper. So if they can invest in one of those two things, I'm sorry, you push Stephen Kwan back a little bit.
That's fair, but where's that investment been on anything?
It hasn't been.
That's where the issue is.
But But then it becomes a circular conversation because I don't know what the money they have. Like if they had a salary cap and I knew that they could spend up to $223 million and they were at $87 million or whatever, I'm going, All right, where's the other money? What are you doing with the other money?
Sure.
Because in the NFL, you have to spend up to 89% at some point over a four-year average.
You have to hit a floor.
What are you doing with the other money? But I don't know where that money is. I have no idea.
And I really assume
that they are, and I know people look at his personal bank account, which is not even his personal bank account. They look at the family trust and see $4.6 billion, and that looks ridiculous and like a slap in the face to everybody. I understand that too, but that is not their money. That is not the Guardians' money. I understand it's a bad look. I understand the brother and all the politics and other things, and that doesn't look great either. Trust me on that. But that ain't their money. That ain't the Guardians' money. So I don't know what they have to spend or don't have to spend on these guys.
And I think the other issue that they have, too, with this particular spot is that there was a certain point where I think they had seven middle infielders on the 40-man roster, including Andrés Giménez, and all of them stink. Like, they just totally mismanaged that. And I think that adds to the frustration is not that they traded this guy and got out from a bad contract, because they did do that. But they had so many opportunities to try and get this right, and they didn't. And that's where I think there's frustration.
And I understand that. And if you want to go by something we've seen, let me meet you halfway on Stephen Kwan. Stephen Kwan is one of the two guys I've seen any consistency out of, both in the field and at the plate. So if you're going to invest in anything, it's like Stephen Kwan would deserve to be invested in. That I understand. But I think if they only have so much money out there, and I think they only do, all right, we've already invested in Tanner Bibee. Can we invest in one of these other young players, other young pitchers? Because that's where I think the season is headed. I'm sorry, guys. I think this is who they are.
Yeah.
I know that they were a half a game out of the third wild card spot. More on that coming up in 2 second trivia at 7:45. Your chance to eat free, Mr. Hero. Just letting you know. They were a half game out yesterday to start the day of the third wild card spot. But as Owen highlighted last week, the only two teams that are out of the wild card race are the A's and the Chicago White Sox. So you're basically run of the mill with everybody else this year. So I've adjusted my goals. My goal is what? My goal is to find four guys in the starting rotation and Logan Allen. And I know Tanner and Gavin have been a little bit up and down, but you've seen their ERA through the month of June. It's been far better. They're starting to come around. Luis Ortiz, I believe, is starting to come around. Yeah, I know. But Luis Ortiz is starting to come around, and Slade Ciccone is coming around. If you got four of those guys, then I'm sorry. This is not a failure of a season if I got four of those guys going into 2026. Now, if they all end up getting hurt, which ends up being our luck and things like that, then, of course, you got a problem there.
See,
I don't know what to do with Shane Bieber right now. I don't want to talk about him yet because I don't want to jinx him.
Right, and I think that's fair, but I think a lot of this has to do with what do the kids that aren't up here look like when they get up here? Because at a certain point, they have to call up DeLauder. They have to call up Kafis. Like, those guys have to be in the big leagues because you have to know what you have, and this is part of the discussion we had yesterday where going into the trade deadline, and not even saying that they're going to be huge buyers, but you want to know who you have. You want to know what you look like, not just for the rest of 2025, but you want to know what 2026 looks like, because a lot of the moves they've made when they have been buyers at the deadline – they have not been rentals. They have been moves like Lane Thomas last year, where he's going to be around for more than 1 year. So that is something that bothers me with it.
One of the tougher things about it as well is I think people have to admit that, you know, you're not going to trade for household names. Okay. You're not going to trade for rentals. CJK. No, I don't know. Maybe Columbus is just terrible. AAA is just terrible this year because everybody who goes down to Columbus ends up killing it. And then they come up here and it's a question. But I think I'd rather see C.J. Kafis or Chase DeLauder than make moves and let guys in the prospects and the farm system go.
I would certainly like to. I would rather see more of those guys, without a doubt.
I think this is who they are. I think they're a 500 baseball team, maybe even sub 500. Hopefully not. And I don't think that that's going to be good enough to warrant a postseason. And I have to adjust my goals for the year. They definitely overachieved last year from what we're looking at.
I don't disagree with that assessment at all. But I would like to know a little bit more about who those guys are as big leaguers before this season ends.
Yeah.
I'd like to know before the trade deadline, because maybe that does change something.